but it's always time to go exploring. Welcome to Outdoor Pursuits with yours truly, Jade Quinn McDonald. Today we have guest Cy Crawford, a good friend of mine, natural adventurer, natural sportsman, and he's going to talk to us about a trip he did to Europe.
Hello, hello.
Hi, Cy. Welcome. So,
thanks for having me.
We're back at school, obviously. Mm-hmm. This is in stark contrast to an adventure you did this summer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you want to introduce us to a little bit about what you did?
Yeah. So this summer, I spent 2 months in Europe overall. The latter half of that, actually latter three quarters of that, maybe month and a half, was spent with friends partying, as you should be in Europe. Mm-hmm. But the first quarter of it was spent on trail. I started in Vaduz, Liechtenstein.
Vaduz, Liechtenstein, yeah. Nice.
And from there went and started traversing my way through the Alps of Switzerland.
All right. And this trail is called the Via Alpina. And in 2008, countries that cross the Alps are, wait, do they all cross the Alps?
Yeah.
Or, yeah? Okay.
The European Alps.
Yeah, the European Alps. So, so 8 countries, they joined together to further develop this trail. It's about 2,000 kilometers, 116 stages, 3,000 meters above sea level. Lots of elevation gain and loss from what I've seen. Mm-hmm. How many stages did you do?
Or segments? I did about 12 stages.
Wow!
But 12 stages in Switzerland.
Okay.
So I kind of picked and chose because it was very early season. So I couldn't just do the whole thing, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. I had to be smart about kind of what I could do. And especially after my first early on experiences, I had to quickly adapt and make some changes. I ended up going from Vaduz to about Interlaken, which is central Switzerland. Uh-huh. And then from there, I realized that the Western passes were just too effed up.
Mm-hmm.
And I made my way south towards Milan.
Okay.
Instead. Yeah.
Okay. So this seems like a good time for a disclaimer. Mm. Anybody listening, if you're thinking of doing the Via Alpina, there are a couple things that we should say.
Don't do it like this.
Don't do it like we're about to describe. Do it with somebody else, mm-hmm. not alone.
Yep.
Do it in season.
Yep.
When is the season?
So I started late April. I got out of school. I took my last final on April 26th, and I immediately flew the next morning into Zurich. So, and then I was on trail, I want to say the 27th.
Okay.
That is way too early.
Okay.
I don't think the huts along the trail open until mid to late May even. So I was about half a month, full month too early.
Okay. Yeah. And is there like a permitting process for this, or do you just hop on the trail?
Just hop on.
Whoa. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. How'd you first hear about the trail?
I first heard about the trail through YouTube,
mm-hmm.
as with everything these days for mm-hmm. me. There's a ultra runner named Karl Saab, who I believe is he's Austrian,
mm-hmm.
but he is a dentist who's just known as like this gnarly trail runner. And, he did the FKT on the Via Alpina, but he, made a like hour long YouTube documentary on it. And I just remember watching it with all my roommates about 2 years ago, and I was like, I really want to do that trail. And then I've got roommates and friends who were studying or living in Europe, and so I knew I was doing a European adventure, and I figured, you know, this is my chance. And my only window was at the start of, or the end of April, start of May.
Yeah, so you made it happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you were going to Europe for an extended period of time. Were you packing for fashion? Were you ready to re-enter the world and you know?
I might actually have my packing list here.
Oh!
Yeah, I would say that was another disclaimer that needs to be said is don't do it with everything you need for Europe on your back. I ended up having about a 25 kilo pack. Yeah, here I have my packing list.
Here we go.
You know, so I had things like, so I brought two pairs of shoes. Mm-hmm. I brought my like trail shoes, which were just on running shoes that were pretty Gore-Tex-y, mm-hmm. Good for waterproof, and then I brought Chacos.
Okay.
So those are my two shoes. So certainly bold. Certainly not fashion choice.
Mm-hmm. Chacos, arguably.
Chacos for sure, but later in the European adventure, I was not wearing Chacos to the club, and I was wearing running shoes. So that was a little tough, but
and they let you in.
They let me in. I was wearing all hiking stuff, so. But I, so, you know, it's all the stuff you would expect.
Yep.
So those shoes, you know, layers, water bottles, poles, headlamp, water filter, blah, blah, blah. But then I also have about two checklist items here that say, quote, swag shirt and swag pants.
Swag shirt and swag pants.
Yeah. So I brought two pairs of pants that were swag is pushing it.
Okay.
But I would say slightly more stylish.
Yep.
For my.
Ready for your reentry.
Later adventures. Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you were carrying all of this on your back, 25 kilos. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little bit about your first misadventure?
First misadventure. So, yeah, the first couple days went great. Got into Zurich, explored there, got into Vaduz, stayed there, had my last meal in the hostel. That was mm-hmm. phenomenal. And then was just really pumped to get on the trail. So first day went great. It was about, I was averaging about 17 miles, so 30K mm-hmm. per day.
Mm-hmm.
And the, I want to say the second day on trail was the first pass.
Okay.
So this was like the moment of truth. I was mm-hmm. like, I don't really, you know, I've done research, but it's hard, especially with all the huts closed, like it's hard to get an updated sense of what things are going to be like.
Mm-hmm.
But I was also writing journal entries every day. So I didn't forget mm-hmm. what happened and what I did. And so I'll read you my journal entry for April 30th, the day of the first pass, which is called Foo Pass.
Please.
So April 30th, 2024, 12-ish miles, 4,500 feet of elevation gain, and 11.5 hours on trail. Holy bleep. We'll say holy crap. Genuinely one of the craziest, most challenging, and most nerve-wracking days of my life. The good news is that I was the first to summit and make it through Foo Pass this season. The bad news is that it took almost everything I had. The day started super chill. I meandered down 2 miles to Weisstannen, which was a tiny sleepy town with no one to be found. I passed through and started my way up segment 3B, Weisstannen to Elm. This segment contained the first pass, but I thought I'd give it to go since there wasn't anybody in the village to ask for updates. The other thing, disclaimer, they did have a logbook there, so people would know if I said that I was supposed right. to come out the next day.
Yeah.
So people would have come looking. That's often the first question I get is like, what if stuff went bad?
Mm-hmm.
But they would have come and got me. Anyway, so I meandered.
Hopefully.
Actually, the next day I met a wilderness, what's it called? Rescue.
Okay. Okay.
And he was like, oh, I would have been the one to come get you.
Oh, there we go.
So it was okay. Let's see. So I meandered some more. I followed a river up about 2.5 miles before it started to get steep. Unsurprised, I motored my way up the beginning of the gnarly part. I couldn't see quite how gnarly. And stopped for a little lunch snack and cat nap in the sun. Upon waking up, I threw on my long sleeve and sunglasses and up I went. Soon, it started to get very snowy. Again, not unexpected, so I put on my micro spikes and carried on. That's when the post-holing began. I had the difficult choice of choosing high ground, which involved battling my way through thick, annoying branches and bushes, or low ground. The low ground came with the deeper snow, unfortunately. According to my map, there was one significant section that wrapped around the corner that was steeper than what I had faced before. I saw it ahead of me and it looked manageable, or at least preferable to backtracking. Plus, it had ibex tracks, mapping a good route through. I should probably mention that below this section was a several hundred foot drop, certain death. The ibex tracks provided me with sturdier footing than had I not followed, but even still, my foot popped through about halfway across the section. I had to scramble to plant my poles in before I slid screaming off the cliff. Finally making it past the death zone, I sighed a big sigh of relief, assuming the worst was behind me. Idiot.
Whoa. Whoa. How did it feel to read that back?
I mean, it definitely sends me back. And I look at pictures, too, and I was like, that was a crazy couple of hours of just, like, fully in the moment thinking, you know, what is the smartest option here? What is the route to take? What mm-hmm. is the way that I'm going to survive this rather than, you know, have to go get rescued or worse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's intense. So these passes, mm-hmm. what can you describe to listeners who maybe aren't super aware of this trekking business? What is a pass? What constitutes a pass?
Pass is just generally, well, it's just the route through the mountains. Mm-hmm. Usually it's the easiest route through. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people are messed up and choose harder routes mm-hmm. through, but generally it goes over like a saddle between mountains that you would want to go over. You know, it's maybe not the most direct route, but it's the best route.
Right.
Yeah.
And typically it would be uncovered by snow.
Later season, yes. Yeah. Usually there's, I would say with this trail, it's not uncommon for there to be snow year round.
Okay.
At some points. Mm-hmm. But yes, you would be able to visibly see the trail significantly more than I would.
Right.
Which this, after that point where I just read, I could not see any trail. You know, it was just me following map and compass.
Right. At that point. Was that due to visibility or no tracks in the snow?
That was due to no tracks in the snow.
Okay.
Yeah. Which I quickly found out that, like, it was better to follow the ibex, even if that went away from kind of what I thought the trail was, mm-hmm. Because they were really smart in finding zones where you don't post hole. So that was a pretty cool little discovery I made.
That's very cool. Mm-hmm. Some innate evolutionary skills
exactly.
there.
Exactly.
Yeah. So you were all by yourself.
Yes.
How do you think it would have been different if you were with another hiker?
You know, this is when people ask me, like, how was it being alone? This is always my answer, is that I don't think I could have done this or done this with the same success mm-hmm. had I been with someone else.
Mm-hmm.
I think later in the season, I would love to have someone, because then it's just grind, right? Mm-hmm. It's just trying to keep motivation levels high, trying to keep stoke levels high, and just trekking along, just covering as much mileage as you can every day. That, I think, would have helped to have a person. But for me, it was more of a mental struggle of like, okay, I got to be on my toes. I got to make the right decisions every time, and I got to listen to my body. And I think if I had to think about the safety and morale of another person, it would have significantly slowed me down and or endangered me more.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like
like for example, I could like stop and just eat or nap when I needed it. There was no like, oh, he wants to push on.
Yeah.
Let's battle on who's going to win this one, you know?
I see that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you feel like you would have made more conservative choices had you been with a partner?
Yes.
Or a group? Yeah. Okay.
Likely. I tend to not be the most conservative decision maker in my daily life.
Yeah.
And, I mean, this was something I was highly, highly motivated to do anyways. So I was pretty focused on finding a way through no matter what.
Yeah. How did you feel like being alone impacted your morale? Was it tougher psychologically? I guess you can't.
You know,
you don't have anything to
compare
to. Yeah,
I don't have anything to compare it to, but I would say I was very, very positive the entire time.
Yeah, well, Sai was kind enough to share some of his diary entries with me, and as you guys heard earlier, you just, you know, sitting for little cat naps, going to bed with a smile on your face after long, long days. Yeah, I don't know if everyone would have been up to that challenge.
Yeah, the cat naps were key. I want to say that. That became one of my, not only just on this trek, but all through Europe, it became like a necessary respite for me to go find a field or a park to lay down in and take a nap for a couple hours.
No doubt.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we got a little bit of a snippet there about that day to pass.
Should I carry on?
Yeah, let's go a bit more into the day to day. Yeah.
Okay, so I just made it past the death zone. I had 2,000 feet of elevation gain left before I got to the pass. I kept climbing, deciding to follow the tracks always as they helped find the best and easiest route through otherwise untouched expanses. I even created a motto that I repeated out loud over and over again. So maybe my morale wasn't as phenomenal as I made it seem.
I mean, I don't know if you could dig that deep and find a little mantra that worked for you.
Yeah, the mantra was, when in doubt, follow the ibex out.
Nice.
Yeah. At this point is when I actually got to see my savior, the ibex. Running on the ridge above me, he sprinted into the valley and up the other side to meet his friend, which was a pretty amazing sight to see.
No doubt.
I moved further, getting more and more frustrated by the unpredictability of the post-holing by the second. Slowly but surely, I was able to make steady progress, only stopping for gummies, which also saved my life, and water. At this point, I rounded a bend, climbed another very steep slope, and startled another ibex that was wandering in front of a couple of buildings, Alpfu. So Alpfu is a cluster of buildings that is a commercial hut when the trail is open.
Gotcha.
And when I was researching the trail before going, I was really excited to go to Alpfu. But I guess I'll just have to go back. Anyway, I figured buildings must imply that I was getting close. And while I was right in terms of distance, I was horribly wrong in terms of time and energy. The snow was so deep here that there was zero hope of staying afloat. And because I was in shorts, my legs got so red that I didn't know if it was due to cold or sunburn. It was both. I had to burn a colossal amount of energy climbing the steepest section of my life, even breaking into a crevasse at one point, dangling by my poles and my pack, the third and fourth things that saved my life today. When I reached the top of that minor victory, I looked back to see gloomy clouds approaching and knew that I had to pick up the pace. I simply didn't have the capacity to move faster. I inched my way to the pass, and I tell you, those yellow signs had never looked so good. Foo pass. I had done it. There was minimal time to celebrate, though. Now I had to get down the gargantuan, snow-covered slope on the other side. I half ran and half slid down, taking the occasional tumble, and passed several more building clusters sealed up tight. No wonder. After a couple more miles of steep, wet descent, I finally emerged back onto a noticeable trail. So this was probably 5 to 7 miles after the pass is when I'm first seeing the trail again. So that gives you a little sense of how covered it was. My quads were cramping horribly, but I had to find a place to sleep, so I kept going until I found an unlocked timber hut where I write this now. I arrived shaking, cold, hungry, and dehydrated, but now all has been remedied, and I am incredibly excited to go to sleep with a smile on my face.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
That's
a push.
It was a push, and it was a rude awakening for what was to come. Yeah.
Serious business.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so speaking of crevasses, folks, before you go into glaciated terrain, make sure you know how to deal with crevasses. This is where maybe it would be beneficial to have another human being.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so getting rescued out of a crevasse.
Would have been tough stuff.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah, I'm glad that you were able to make it out.
And that's the argument for the massive 25-kilo pack.
Yeah.
Was that I was significantly larger and couldn't fit into the small opening.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
You also had to haul yourself up with an additional 25 kilos.
This is true. Pros and cons, Jade. Pros and cons.
Yeah. Okay, so waking up day to day, was there anything that you dreaded? You're like, oh no, I have to do this again. Even small things that you weren't looking forward to on a day to day basis.
That I wasn't looking forward
to. We'll talk about the positive too.
I would say it wasn't necessarily dreading, but it was like my one significant chore was that I had to get water, of course, right? The nice thing is that when I was going through towns, Switzerland's really cool in that it has fresh mountain spring water just flowing from open taps in like every town you go through.
That's pretty stellar.
And often like on the start of trails and things too. Mm-hmm. Like pretty amazing stuff. And some of these fountains are like from the 1850s, you know, like they've been there and they've been solidly flowing for years and years and years. So that was good. But in between those sections, you know, there were a couple sections where I wasn't going through towns or wasn't going through towns for days. And I would have to find a source of water. And more commonly, the issue was getting to the source of water. So, for example, on the second pass, stuff also went awry. Not quite as awry as the first pass, but I got caught in a storm on the other side, and had to stay in I had to do a little bit of breaking and entering into a little hayloft, and you know, wait the storm out. And part of that was that I had to climb my way over to waterfalls with these slick rocks in the middle of this storm with horrible visibility in order to gather water for myself to be able to stay for 3 days. So the gathering water part was good because it got me moving and it gave me an objective for days that maybe I wouldn't have moved from my location, but it was certainly hard at some points.
No doubt.
Yeah. But I wouldn't say there was anything that I was actually like dreading. You know, I would always wake up and I would be like, hell yeah, I'm here.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
So being out there, I guess we can talk about what you like looked forward to on a day to day. Was it like objective based or were you more like in it till you dropped?
I would say it depended on the day. I would say if it was a pass day, absolutely objective based. Mm-hmm. You know, especially after that first one, I was like, okay, I just got to punch my way through this pass, get up there, you know, get up there early. No time to dilly-dally.
Mm-hmm.
But if it was not a pass day, then it was purely just, like, all about the journey. You know, I would just wander, and I always laugh because I look back at my photos, and you just see this evolution of, like, at first, I take a photo at, like, every corner I turn around, you know, and then as the trek goes on, I just stop taking pictures because no matter what, there's a more impressive view around the next corner. And so it was just like, I would wander on, you know, for hours a day and just be, my eyes were just wide open and just jaw was on the floor.
Can you try to paint a little auditive picture for us of the scenery?
I mean, it's exactly what you expect when you think the Swiss Alps, mm-hmm. right? Like, gorgeous blue skies, green pastures with dotted with flowers, with these lovely milk cows with their ringing bells around their neck, and goats and sheep and farmers just wandering through. And then in the back of it all, you have these massive jagged snow-capped peaks. Like, it was just, it looked like a green screen every time I turned the corner.
Holy man
is right.
Was that something that you expected, or like, since you were taking pictures at the beginning, were you like, oh, last chance to see? Or was it like,
I think I expected it, but it's in no way can you capture that.
Mm-hmm.
like there was a reason I was drawn to this trail, and it was that documentary I watched with Carl Saab.
Mm-hmm.
And like, the footage on that is pretty unreal, and I knew that it was gonna be unreal, but then you get there and I was just like, holy, this is, yeah, another, you know. And I grew up in the Rockies too, and mm-hmm. it's just an entirely different mountain range.
Yeah Well, that's a good segue into your trekking background. What kind of stuff did you do before Via Alpina?
It's funny because this is like pretty much my first, what I would consider, through hike.
Okay.
You know, Via Alpina is considered the, basically like the parallel to the Appalachian Trail,
mm-hmm.
but in Europe. And I wasn't doing the whole thing, of course. I was actually doing a very small segment of it, all things considered. But yeah, I just kind of went for it. And it's not that I was inexperienced.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up backpacking.
Mm-hmm.
I had done week and a half long trips. But this was the first one where I was one, alone, two, covering that much distance every day.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we're coming up on halftime here, and this is typically when I like to bring in a little music.
Halftime show.
So, Sai, can you tell us a little bit about the song they're about to hear?
Yeah, so this is Charlie Crockett. Considered kind of country. This is 2016, so a little more modern country, but it was introduced to me by my roommate and dear friend, George Weaver. Shout out, George Weaver. And he is also from Colorado. And so this summer we were driving back from a trail run, and this was a trail run that we had done 12 miles that day, but I was convinced that I had either a hernia or appendicitis.
Oh.
And so I was in horrible pain, but we said, you know, we had been planning this trail run for a while. And anyway, we get through it. We're driving back home, and I'm just relieved that it's over, and George plays this song, and it was good vibes. So, enjoy.
Spectacular.
Now, darling, I am not afraid to love you. I am not afraid. And sugar, honey pie, ain't gonna hurt you or let you down. Oh, I know I got to be stronger. Oh, little girl, I will never do you wrong. I will be better for having you by my side. There's one left thing you can do for me. Just before you go, look into my eyes and see this love, so that you'll always know. And darling, sugar pie, ain't gonna hurt you or let you down. Darling, I am not afraid to love you. I am not afraid. Do you wrong? So, darling, just tell me you need me, and I will be better for having you by my side. And sugar, I am not afraid to love you. I am not afraid. 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 I am not afraid.
Look at my phone. Huh? What's that?
Man, what are you doing? Get over here and come jam.
Wow, what a lovely assortment of musicians. What are you guys doing?
This is E-Studio. We come together and build connections over music. No musical experience needed. Just come socialize and build your confidence playing music if that's your thing.
Wow, this is so awesome. Now I have a real-life connections with Vancouver's international community of musicians and creatives. Thank you, E-Studio. E-Studio is an international jam group where we celebrate music from all around the world and play together. Follow us on Instagram at estudio.cafe. eastudio.cafe.
Okay, let's see here. Blend equal parts science and stories. Add a few shakes of music and soundscape, and wrap it all up in a big question. How can we see this more than human world in a new light and take part in shaping a healthy Anthropocene? Catch Future Ecologies every Sunday at 8 a.m. on CITR.
Hi there. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from UBC Vancouver campus located on the unceded ancestral and traditional lands of the Hunkaminim-speaking Musqueam people. We honor the ancestral and ongoing care for this land by the host nations. Media practices are often rooted in white gaze, and we recognize that it is our responsibility to shift our approach and move towards radical empathy. While we broadcast from UBC Vancouver campus, our listenership extends to the unceded lands of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh nations and beyond. We encourage you to check out native-land.ca, that is native-land.ca, to learn more about whose land and territory you live and work on or may be visiting. Thank you.
No matter your disability, you likely face barriers in your everyday life. At Neil Squire, we help break those barriers down by helping you access employment, technology, and the tools you need to live your life to the fullest. As a nonprofit organization, we empower people with disabilities all across Canada, and we are here for you too. Visit neilsquire.ca to learn more.
Welcome back.
We're back.
We're back. This is Outdoor Pursuits with Jade Quinn McDonald and Cy Crawford.
Hello.
We just were making sure we had all our metrics right so that Cy can tell us how much he went up and across the Alps. Because they were all in, in Imperial?
Not in Imperial.
What's it called?
I don't know. Miles and feet.
Yeah.
Yeah, I
should know what that is. What?
We got this.
Is that not Imperial? Yeah, those are Imperial.
Oh, yeah.
You're welcome.
Right. My bad. That's
okay. Okay, so how many kilometers did you end up traversing?
Kilometers I ended up traversing was about 250.
Nice.
Which I would say before I went, my eyes were significantly bigger than my stomach, so to speak, in terms of I thought I was going to be moving faster and moving more consistently. But that's what you get for early season.
Mm-hmm.
So 250 kilometers, about, 2,500? No, what was
it? Up?
How much was it?
7,600 meters of elevation gain.
7,600 meters of elevation
gain. That's a lot.
It was a lot.
Yeah.
It was a lot. So, like, a pass day was usually about 4,500 feet, which would be,
It's like 1,000, over 1,000?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Over 1,000 meters. My biggest pass day, I think, was 6,500 feet. So there were some big days. There were some big days for sure, but then again, like, I would do a big day and then get caught in a storm and rest for 3 days. So,
yeah,
you know, it's a balance.
On these rest days,
did
you account for them when you were packing food and things like that?
Nope.
Okay.
So, for example, the second pass, it's called Clausen Pass.
Clausen Pass.
Yeah, which was very fitting. It felt very Claus Christmassy.
Ooh.
Because
there was like a meter of snow.
There was a lot more than a meter. Yeah, and so that's the one that I got stuck in the little hayloft type shed.
Yeah.
And that one, I go in when the storm's starting. I'd eaten about half my food for that day.
Okay.
And I was projected to be back in the next village by the next morning to restock on food. And instead, I ended up staying in that hut for 3 days.
Wow.
Yeah. So I was stretching it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, wasn't burning a lot of energy.
Okay.
So it wasn't like outlandishly stretched. I wasn't starving.
Mm-hmm. There. What were you eating?
My diet consisted mainly of bread, meat, and cheese.
Nice.
You know, when it's
European special.
When in Switzerland, right? Cheese lived up to the hype. It all lived up to the hype. But my supplementary snacks were probably more interesting. It was mainly all carbs. So I've got a picture here. Jade can describe what she sees.
Okay, I'm seeing a lot of cured meat. I'm seeing some Haribo. I'm seeing some high energy bars. I'm seeing some cheese. Oh, Pringles.
Pringles are my secret.
Pringles. Interesting. Why Pringles?
Okay, because everyone on trail can attest to the fact that you want something salty,
okay,
right? But you can't bring chips normally because they're in a bag and they get crushed.
Yeah.
Pringles solved the problem. They solved the problem, guys.
How many tubes of Pringles did you bring?
This is a good metric. I probably went through 1 to 2 tubes of Pringles a day.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I was inhaling those things.
So your bag was
mainly just sour cream and onion.
Okay, interesting.
And also I found out that a good way to make friends with cows is feed them Pringles.
Hey, you didn't hear that here.
Yeah. Shh.
Okay, so were you making like full-on sandwiches? Were we looking at open-faced sandwiches? Were we looking at rolled up cured meat with cheese and bread as a little dessert? What?
Ooh.
I don't know.
Mainly open-faced sandwiches.
Okay,
you know,
cool.
I would like rip off a chunk of bread.
Yeah.
And then stack meat and cheese high and
stack them high.
Gorge myself.
Very nice.
Yeah, yeah. I would say you were asking me about, you know, motivation and how I kept going, and food was huge for that. Most of the time, if you asked me on trail what I was thinking about, it was my next meal. It was like looking around, loving it, but waiting for my next meal.
Right. I see that. Yeah, especially in such a remote area, you just want to make sure that you can stay fed, stay energized.
Totally.
Yeah, super important.
Totally.
Did you have any sleepless nights? Sorry.
No.
Wow.
Actually, yes. There was one towards the end of my trek where it was absolutely pissing rain. Like, we're from Vancouver. I think I'm pretty used to rain, and it was pissing rain. And it was late at night, and it wasn't late, but it was dark. And the other thing I should say is, to cut weight, I didn't bring a tent. I instead was hammock and tarp camping.
Okay.
Which I love. I actually prefer camping that way. But
Are you above tree level? Sorry to interrupt.
Well, I never wanted to camp above tree level.
Uh-huh. That's a good... Yeah,
that felt dangerous.
Nice.
Plus, there was snow. So, yep. Sucked to do that anyway. So, I would always get below tree level to camp. But yeah, this night it was pouring rain, and I really did not want to set up my hammock and tarp in the rain because that just would have been ineffective.
Mm-hmm.
And I was looking for just like some place with some sort of shelter, and I come across a cave, and like a deep cave. I was like, I was in Minecraft. Like, it was crazy. I was like, this is exactly what I needed when I needed it. What is going on? So I walk into this like mossy cave, and it's dry, which was phenomenal, but the floor was fully sloped. So.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So, you know, take some, you leave some.
Yeah.
But I chose dry over comfy sleep.
Okay.
But that was probably my most sleepless night.
Damn.
Yeah.
In a cave.
In a cave.
In a cave.
And then the next morning, sun was shining, hopped out of the cave, set up my hammock, and got a few hours of sleep.
Oh, nice. Yeah. Okay. So. Yeah, that's the way. Well done.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Did you, how many days in total were you on the trail?
I want to say 12.
12 days?
Yeah.
That's pretty good. How many rest days? You just had those three?
Those three and, so the pattern was just me getting caught in storms and seeing what I could do with it. So another storm happened while I was passing through Interlaken, which was actually nice because I got a few hostel days. So
oh,
I got
nice.
Two hostel days that night. But I left. This was actually the night before the cave night.
Okay.
And I left in the middle of a storm.
So you left luxury.
Because there was the loudest snorer I have ever experienced
in the
hostel.
Are you serious?
Like shaking the room. It was a 12-person room. He was on the other side of the room and just, like, vibrating. Like, I had earbuds in with max volume white noise, and I couldn't sleep. And I'm a good sleeper.
Whoa.
Yeah. And, anyway, we could get into that, but.
We won't.
We won't
get ranting.
So I chose rain and cave over snoring man.
Wow. Mm. Wow. And I guess after that many days being by yourself, being back locked in with 12 people would have been quite the adjustment.
Yeah, it was just weird. And I was just like, I'd rather be like cold and wet than, I don't know. The whole point was just like to be on the trail. Mm-hmm. I felt like I was kind of betraying that a little bit.
Mm.
But so there was that. That was like a day and a half, but two nights. Mm-hmm. And then, let's see, there was the three rest days. And then this wasn't a rest day, but I had one other hostel night.
Mm-hmm.
And that was coming off of Fupass, mm-hmm. the one that I read. The first person I reached was this wilderness rescue guy.
Right.
And he's working on a trail crew, and he's sitting in his truck, and I walk down and I'm walking past him, and he like calls me over and he's like, "Did you just do Foo Pass? Like, what the hell is going through your mind?" And I talked to him for a bit, and he was like, "Yeah, I would have had to rescue you." And he asked me where I was from, and I told him Colorado, and then we parted ways. And I went down in the village to just like, oh, I had to charge my phone. So I was resting and recovering in this hotel restaurant and drinking three beers and charging my phone. And that night I was like, I'm going to treat myself. I'm going to stay in a hostel. And so I can't check into my hostel until 5 p.m. So with my pattern, as usual, I go to a field to lay down in and sleep.
Uh-huh.
And then I start walking about an hour to this town called Matt to get to my hostel. And as I'm walking, I'm about halfway there. And a beat-up Subaru pulls up next to me, and it's the trail guy.
Okay.
And he goes, "Yo, Colorado, you need a ride?" And I was like, "Hell yeah, I need a ride." So I hop in the passenger seat, and it turns out that he is the owner of the hostel.
No kidding.
So he's the owner of the
hostel.
Are
you serious?
He's a ski patroller, wilderness rescue, and trail maintenance.
What?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Elite combo.
No way he owns this hostel.
And he built the hostel.
What?
Yeah. So it's all like this gorgeous woodwork, like,
oh my god,
kitchen. I was the only solo guy staying there, and then there was like three families, and
wow,
they were all really nice and let me eat dinner with them.
And this was all happenstance. This was like,
all happenstance.
What?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah, so that was great. So that was like a really restful rest day in comparison to the snoring man,
mm-hmm.
rest day, you know, like not all rest days were created equal.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
That's too cool. I did not, I didn't hear this part of the story.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's really nice. Did you meet any other people on the pass?
I actually not meet anyone on the pass, but I did not see another person on the trail in the 12 days I was out there.
Whoa. Because it was closed.
Because it's too early.
Because yeah. So does
so technically
this...
the pass was open. So,
okay.
So technically the trail was open.
And the huts are just closed.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
I see.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think people were just like, I also don't think a ton of international trekkers do it until late season.
Right.
Right? Because they're like, why would I why would I spend the money and stuff to get over there?
Yeah, whereas you were already.
Whereas I was already over there, and I was like, this is the only time I have, so, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah. Did you see any wildlife other than the ibex?
Ibex, like I said, a lot of goats, a lot of sheep. Mm-hmm. There was one time, actually, I was attempting to pet a goat and got shocked by electric fence. So another disclaimer, beware of electric fences.
Don't pet goats.
No, that's not the disclaimer. The disclaimer is beware of electric fences. but other wildlife, I'm trying to think of, I mean, llamas. Most of it was like... Pastoral animals.
Pastoral animals.
Yeah. I would say. Right. I'm trying to think if I saw anything really amazing.
I mean, I just looked up a picture of an ibex.
Ibex are pretty amazing.
Did they have those huge horns? Yeah.
Well, actually, they were pretty young.
Okay.
So this is the interesting thing, is ibex, you can tell how old an ibex is by taking the nodules on their horns and dividing it by two. So they grow... They grow two nodules on their horns per year.
Okay.
So it's like a tree ring, but for
an ibex.
Is this
a scientific term?
Nodules?
Yeah.
I don't know what it's actually called. Okay. We can look it up. But let's see. Nodules of a ibex. The nodules of a horns of an ibex.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Oh, wait.
Wait a second.
I'm getting fact-checked literally right now. If you're close enough to be able to make out the animal's horns, you may notice an, blah, 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 blah. The nodules of the horns of an ibex don't allow its age to be calculated.
Wow.
I just got absolutely. But you can tell if it's male or female.
Okay,
based
well.
Based on the angle of its horns.
Surely you heard that from somebody.
No, I.
You made it up in your mind.
I read that on, they have these like. Well, in the valley down by Weisstannen,
yeah,
they have these signs that are by the river.
Well, surely it's an estimate. Surely it's some sort of rough estimate.
It seems like they misled me. I don't know. We'll have to do more research.
But post-episode.
Theoretically, you can estimate the age of an ibex.
By counting the nodules.
Yeah.
Dividing by two.
Yeah.
So these guys.
But they are
young.
Called nodules. That's confirmed.
That's what I was more worried about anyway.
Yeah.
So I'm just looking at these ibex. Do they have little beards? Did you see the beards?
I only got close enough to one to see the beard.
Oh.
And that was the one that I scared at. Literally, I popped up over this rise and right before Alpfu, the huts. And that one was maybe 5 feet from me.
Whoa.
And it looked at me, jumped, and then sprinted off. And they're fast. They're really fast. But that one I did see the beards. The other ones that I just saw running through the valley, that was too far away to see.
Right.
But I hope it had a beard.
Yeah, I hope so too.
I hope so.
Yeah. That's fantastic. Okay, do you want to do a little last reflection on the lessons you learned?
I think... Lessons I learned was, one, know what you're getting into.
Mm-hmm.
Which, to be fair, I did
he
know.
Knew.
I knew that I didn't know.
Okay.
Right? But I didn't know what I didn't know, I would say. You know?
That's the dangerous part.
Exactly. So I think in this scenario, it was tough to get updated info, but I wish I had... dug a little deeper, and I wish I had been more okay internally with saying no. You know, I wish...
To yourself.
To myself.
Okay.
I wish... I'm glad that it all worked out, but I wish there was a little more... you know, it's okay to turn back. It's okay to circumnavigate this pass and just go on a train, you know? But looking back, I'm also really proud of myself that I did it. So I would say that's one. And the other lesson is that I'm really cool with myself being alone now.
Nice.
I would say. Like, not that I wasn't before, but this was by far the most time I had spent alone with my own thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well.
Yeah.
yeah, that'll make you turn inward for sure.
100%. Yeah, I'm really glad I did it, and I want to do other solo treks. And I want to do the Via Alpina again when it's in season. I think it would be a totally different experience to, one, have a lighter pack.
Yep.
Move faster.
Yep.
Stay in huts. I mean, that is...
That's huge.
The one of the most beautiful things about the trail is you can just meet people and have a beer at the end of the day, yeah, and eat good food at, yeah, the top of a pass, you know,
no doubt
above the world.
It.
So.
Yeah.
So, yeah. A lot of learned lessons and a lot of to-do list, mm-hmm, items.
Awesome. Well, I would like to close with what it was like to come out of the trail,
mm,
and continue with your European adventure.
Right. That was a pretty amazing feeling. I think, you know, because I had was a flight booked out of Milan,
mm-hmm,
that was going to Croatia. Mm-hmm. And I was meeting all of my high school buddies in Croatia. And so that was always on my bucket list. It's like, I have to be out at this time.
Mm-hmm.
And when I actually got to Milan and I was flying out the next day, it was like, whoa, I just did this thing that's been on my mind for so long. And more recently, I've spent 12 hours a day for 12 days thinking about nothing but my next few steps, mm-hmm, you know? And so it just felt like I could broaden my vision a bit, and in terms of like, wow, I can look a couple weeks ahead, mm-hmm, and plan things out and, mm-hmm, stay in hostels and sleep in beds and things like that. And I ended up camping more in my European adventure, just because I didn't want to pay for hostels,
mm-hmm,
but certainly not to the degree. So it felt luxurious, to say the least. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you heard it here, folks. Disclaimers aside,
mm-hmm,
go get out there.
Go
maybe
do
a solo trek. Just make sure that it's in season.
Go do it.
Yeah, go learn about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No better way but to spend time with yourself.
Yeah. Thanks for your time, Sai.
Thanks for having me.
This has been Outdoor Pursuits. Thanks for listening.
Woo!
See you next time.